Kaya, Wonju, hello, welcome to another episode of The Curb. I'm Andrew F. Pierce, and this is a podcast where I bring you in-depth interviews with filmmakers, creatives, and curators of culture. This podcast is recorded in Boolu, Western Australia, sovereignty never ceded. Carmen and Baloo Day mark something of a first for Australian films. Here is a comedy about two close friends, Carmen, played by Michaela Caratini, and Baloo Day, played by Baloo Day Waldson, who both call Australia home. Carmen proudly embraces her Latin heritage, while Baloo Day navigates the line between Western values and her Nigerian roots. Together, they take on the world and the rampant Americanized identity politics that have caused much of society to turn against itself. We meet Carmen on the subways of New York, where a man uses the close proximity of a packed train to touch her. Carmen loudly and proudly advocates for herself, standing up against the patriarchal dominance of the spaces we live. When we meet Baloo Day, she is also working abroad in New York, a home away from home where she needs to navigate the surprise marriage proposal from her white Aussie boyfriend Tommy, played by Liam Grenke. And that navigation means a careful consideration of how she approaches her cultural roots and the path that she wants to follow in her life. After all, it's quite likely that her father, Akin, played by Wale Ojo, would disapprove of the marriage. And disapprove he does, giving Baloo Day the ultimatum that she needs to collect 100 welcomes from Australian locals to prove to her father that she is a home away from home. What follows is a bright and delightful celebration of sisterhood, friendship, and remembering the cultural roots that tie us to our parents and our past. What makes Carmen and Baloo Day something of a first for Australian films is in its proudly women-led foundations, driven by voices that want to hear themselves on screen in an industry that regularly asks for more diversity on screen, but rarely gives it. We so rarely get to hear from the Nigerian diaspora on screen in Australia, so to not only see and hear their stories, but to also witness the joy of dance, is an impactful step forward for Australian cinema. Carmen and Baloo Day is a joyous, life-affirming comedy that'll have you grinning from start to finish, full of rich and beautiful characters that make you feel like you're spending time with family and friends. It's a genuine delight, and I'm grateful for the time and openness that both Michaela and Baloo Day shared with me in the following interview. In the following discussion, Michaela and Baloo Day talk about the journey of getting this story on screen and the joy of dance and the importance of seeing and hearing your own stories on screen. Carmen and Baloo Day will be screening at the Hayden Orpheum on 19th March 2025 with further screenings around Australia. For all of the screening dates and details, visit Carmen and Baloo Day on Instagram or visit the link in the show notes. And if you want to find out more about what we do in The Curb, then head over to thecurb.com.au. We are a completely independent and ad-free website that lives on the support of listeners and readers just like yourself. If you can and you have the means to support us, please visit patreon.com/thecurbau to support our work from as little as $1 a month. Here's a trailer for Carmen and Baloo Day, followed by my interview with Michaela Caratini and Baloo Day Waldson.
So, you're dating a white man.
Hey, Dad. I'm well, thank you. How are you?
Ladies and gentlemen, I just found a lost hand on my ass.
I didn't leave you in America, Chase Man.
He's Australian, actually.
So you are dating a criminal?
Very funny.
That, the wedding's in 2 weeks. We don't fight,
what you know. You're not gonna go Bridezilla on me, are you?
This is insane.
Go to back home to Australia, and you get 100 welcomes.
From 100 villages.
I'm sure we can navigate Sydney. We're from New York, so we're gangsta.
Have you ever seen a huntsman spider? They kind of like, you, whoa, you know?
Okay, I have to get out of here.
Let's kick off with talking about the film. And I know it's partially based on a true story, but I'd love to know how you both came into each other's orbit in both a friend level, but also in a creative level as well. How did you both meet each other?
We met each other at an acting workshop run by casting director Lee Pickford, more of a casting. So our meeting personally was simultaneous with our meeting professionally. And I think we both admired each other's work in this workshop. And as projects go in this industry, it ended and we thought, or I thought, maybe, you know, we'll never see these lovely people again. And I got a phone call and I had no idea how she got my number at the time. And she just said, "Hey, you know, I really, you know, admired your work, and I'd really like to write together." And I was really surprised because I wasn't a writer. And, you know, when I told her that, I was like, sure, why not? Okay. But I'm not a writer. You know that, right? And, you know, I think, I don't know, Baluda, if this is true, I think maybe you had like a secret vision from the very beginning that I didn't know about. Yeah. And so we met up. We talked a lot about kind of lack of representation in the industry and how hard it was to get roles that represented the kind of women that we were and the kind of women that we wanted to see, particularly in Australian film, particularly for dark-skinned women, and particularly for, I think, African-Australian women. And yeah, Baluda, do you want to take it from there?
No, that pretty much sums it all. Vision, I think, I personally think that we were destined to do this together. I think we both didn't know it at the time, but we refer to each other as sisters. And I think we were sisters before we knew we were sisters, if that makes any sense. It makes sense to me. So I think this movie came about because we recognized the lack of important female-driven storytelling that we knew existed in Australia, but was really absent in film and TV. And I remember Michaela saying to me, well, then let's give ourselves jobs. Let's do this for us. Let's just do this. And what she forgot to mention was our first pass. Well, my first pass was this horrible, horrible piece of work that I thought would help because I was pandering to, you know, what already was out there. And Michaela, I had her in a, she, yeah, I'm sorry about that, Michaela, but I wrote for her a character where she was just constantly in a two-piece. And it became, yeah, and based in a hostel, a youth hostel.
And I was
hostel.
Like, girl, I just had a baby.
And we met up and we quickly realized that that was just not going to solve any of the problems that we had identified. And just in talking about life, our journeys, our stories. And I shared with her how I met my now husband and the interesting circumstances that happened around it. So the part of the movie that's true is my dad really was not supportive of me falling in love, getting engaged to a Caucasian man, an Australian, and he did give me an ultimatum, but he did not send me on this, you know, wild goose chase to get a billion likes, 500 likes. That was totally our imagination. And just sharing with Michaela the conversations that happened, while painful, I guess was funny, and I guess that's the beauty about comedy. It's birthed in pain. And she just said, I remember she said, well, then, you know, let's write that. Let's write our story. Let's just tell the world what we've been through. And so we did.
You're talking about meeting each other on the set and doing, you know, work together and things like that. And often, you know, you creatively do something. You working on a film set, that becomes a family and you never get to see that family again. And it's beautiful to hear that you talk about each other as sisters, because we see that on screen and creatively we feel that sense of family and the sisterly bond that you two have. It's beautiful, right?
Oh yeah. It actually feels very weird not to be holding Baluda's hand right now.
Right now, yeah.
While we're doing this interview, it feels very wrong somehow.
Digitally, you're doing it. Digitally, you're doing
yes.
it.
Spiritually, we're doing it. Yeah. But that's to your point. We see a lot of storytelling where women are, you know, fighting each other and, you know, clawing at each other's necks and backbiting and that whole narrative about of women not being able to support women. And I think that's so false. I mean, we see it all the time. And I mean, in my circle, I come from a really, really, really strong female-led and female-backed community. And I think it's high time we see that, you know? It's time to see what women really are and what we can accomplish. And even just the storytelling was one thing, but how it came together and how women, I don't know if Michaela shared this to you, but the whole project, the production was quite female heavy, right? Female heavy. Yeah. And that was not a mistake. But yeah, you get to see what women can do when given the chance. So that was really beautiful and a blessing to see and do and have.
And not just what we can do, but also the kinds of stories and perspectives and mm-hmm. that are important to us and that matter to us. And, you know, they may not be exactly the same, or they may not. If you have a different lived experience, I can completely understand how, you know, the drama that happens to these women in the story might be harder to understand or might, you know, not resonate in the same way. And I think, you know, as we all say many times over, but we rarely see actually done, you know, to actually have a variety of perspectives and stories about different things that matter to different people is so valuable, because it's validating to those people who don't get to see themselves and don't get to see the things that matter to them.
And I've certainly noticed that myself. Like, over the years, I've been tracking how many women-led productions are made in Australia, and the industry itself talks about we need to have more gender diversity on screen and stuff, and that's great. But women-directed films, women-scripted films, and women-produced films are really, really low. Like, last year, I think I could count maybe 4 or 5 films on one hand, right? That's it, out of about 50 features that were released that were both written and directed by women. And it's like they're mostly happening in an independent space. And I keep on kind of shaking the roof a little bit to say, well, if you want what you're saying that you want, then actually put your money where it is and support filmmakers like yourselves to actually get these stories out there. So that's the exciting thing about getting to see this. Yeah.
Thank you. It's such an important point, Andrew, and thank you for you know, shaking the room and saying it, because there is so much lip service around inclusion and representation, but we don't actually see it in practice, particularly in those decision-making roles. Particularly, we're not talking about just faces on screen, but we're talking about who is telling the story, who is talking about what's important to them, and the way, who is, you know, making the decisions about which films get funded, and who's making the decision about which films get distributed, and who is, you know, making the decision about which films get programmed at our film festivals. Those things are what make real change. And, you know, I kind of bang on about how easy it could be if you look at examples like what Flickr Fest did when they jumped from almost no female directors to 50% directors in 1 year, just by taking the names off of the films, so that the programmers no longer knew whether it was a male or a female who made the film, and how that instantly, you know, created equity and fair equity, as in women are 50% of the population, right? So all of a sudden they were 50% of the films being programmed at that festival because of the change that they made to, you know, balance for unconscious bias. So it's definitely possible. It shouldn't be as hard as it seems to be.
But I imagine as well, it's got to be a little bit tiring to continue to have these conversations when all you want to talk about is the work itself, right?
Absolutely.
And then you go, me coming along and going, wow, how frustrating is this? So let's actually talk about your film.
Well, the work is born out of this. The work is born out of this. But you don't need to apologize. The work is partly because we need to keep talking about this. Yeah. So it's part of it. Yeah.
I had a conversation with somebody yesterday, I won't say who it is, but they're quite a major person in Australian film, and they lamented about the fact that there are hardly any comedies nowadays and how disappointing it is to see that there are so few comedies. So it was an absolute delight to be able to sit down and watch this and laugh from beginning to end, right? It's a delightful film to be able to spend time with. And so yeah. It's like we talk about, you know, the things that we need to see, the voices we need to see on screen. But I think the genres that we need to see on screen are equally important. Was it always going to be a comedy that you were creating here?
I mean, it was really quickly evident that what our film was, the subject matter and our message would be best delivered through the vehicle of comedy, because, you know, no one likes to be preached at. No one likes to say, look, you suck, you're racist, you're, you know, prejudiced and all. No one really wants to have hard messages shoved down their throats. And, you know, the beauty of comedy is you can tell. And that's why I love Dave Chappelle and Trevor Noah, because they give you some hard-hitting truths, but without kind of your, well, you know you're getting it, but you're laughing along the way, so it sits different, and it hits, it's kind of like a salve, like you're not really feeling the pain until later when you go, huh, he really pointed out my, you know, my blind spots there. And so for us, we wanted to, it was really important to get the message out, but we knew we had to do it in a way where people would enjoy it, get it, and be open to it, and have that, you know, have that chance to deliver the message. And I think with comedy, you get that opening. But we, you know, yeah, we still wanted the seriousness to be felt. The levity of what we were talking about had to be felt as well.
If I can quote Alok Vernon very recently on The Daily Show, they said, this might not be word for word, but they said something like, what fails every campaign for social change is humor, is a lack of humor.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's so insightful, especially today in this moment of time. We're polarizing like never before. We're not listening to each other. Never before. Like, we're really just picking our sides and you know, feeling like everyone else who doesn't agree with us, you know, should go to hell. It's something that can, laughter is something that can connect us, and laughter is something that relaxes our bodies.
Yeah.
And our minds in a way that creates an openness that other emotions don't. And I want to say this too, the very first scene that we wrote, to me, it was a scene that, it was the scene when Baluda's father, Akin, calls her. It was almost word for word exactly what happened in real life. And it encapsulated humor and pain, you know, at the same time. And when Baluda was telling me what happened with her father, she was being very euphemistic when she said he wasn't supportive. He disowned her. And he was dead serious, but at the same time, he was, she would do his voice, you know, she would do exactly the things he said and the whole bit. And there was something, I was in stitches at the same time she was telling me, like, I was just laughing so hard at some of the out there things that he would say completely seriously in the way that he would say it, which was, you know, this incredibly, you know, Yoruba way, you know, and for me, that's real life. Real life, we get moments of laughter and pain that pull us through, or just because sometimes laughing is easier than crying. And we get, you know, and then in happy moments and moments that are funny, we also get pain. You know, something just veers off for a second the wrong way, in a way that we didn't expect or couldn't control or whatever. And all of a sudden it becomes a painful thing. And maybe you don't react to it in that second, but later you're still thinking about it going, what just happened? And so the truth of those things being together, and the way that you know, feels real and true, I think, to us, was another element of why there had to be humor in it.
Hello.
Hello.
To Tommy and Blue.
Here, Sydney is very multicultural. Is that true?
Yeah, absolutely. Whatever you want, we got them. We're like a licorice all sorts.
Fabulous.
I have 10 days to get 100 people from 100 different places to welcome me.
Smile. Oh, not like an American.
Why are you laughing?
When are we getting married?
You've lost your roots, girl. That's why your dad's upset.
Why is she having the nerve to practically call me white?
She didn't. What? That's awful.
It is. This world will force you to make a choice, huh?
Either you choose your reasonable father, Ake, or you go against your people, your culture, your roots, your family.
It's a lie that you have to choose sides. It's a diabolical lie. You got this.
Sometimes it doesn't feel like we're even related.
We're not related, Carmen.
What do we do?
We dance.
I am.
One of the things I really love as well, like I feel like no film is made worse by having a dance scene in there. And so getting to see dance here as well, I was just like, ah, yes. Like you're catering to what I enjoy seeing, because there's nothing that's more kind of effusive about joy and happiness than getting to see people dancing and expressing themselves in a fearless way.
I love that.
Yeah, right?
Oh my gosh.
I love that. Oh, Andrew, you're going to make me cry. I hope it's okay that I call you Andrew.
Of course.
By first name. That's cool. Yeah. So my dad watched the film and I asked him, so my dad, I got permission to tell the story. And then he was involved with, he gave his okay with the guy that plays him. And then he watched the film. And so we talked and I said, so what do you think? And he goes, it's a very good film. My favorite part is the wedding scene. And I did not see that coming. I didn't think that that would be his favorite scene. And in my culture, we know how to rejoice. We know how to joy. Like that's where it's at. The laughter, the food that comes with that, the dancing. And so it goes back to what one of the beautiful reasons why we did it and what our film talks about, legacy and roots. And so it was beautiful to give my dad a piece of his roots back to him, because my whole journey, I realized what his fear was, and it had nothing to do with black, white, racism. It was more fear of losing his identity and fear of losing his roots, because children are a big thing and doesn't have a male child, so all his girls are important to him. And me being so far away means kind of losing a child, and in his fear, it looked that way. But he gained a whole new continent with me marrying Craig. You know, he's got his roots just extended beyond Africa. And so him seeing that scene for him, I think, was him understanding that it wasn't his daughter marrying a Caucasian, an Australian, wasn't something to be sad or mourn, but it was symbolic. The wedding scene was him understanding that he gets to rejoice, he gets to celebrate, and he gets to dance and sing and be happy, because it is a thing of joy. So I'm really glad that scene reads and it hits the way it does, because my dad said the same thing. He loves that scene. And I'm just glad that that you felt probably what my dad felt. So thank you for sharing that.
You're welcome. Like, it's just, it's lovely. And everything that you're saying there is a celebration of culture, right? Of where you come from, for your heritage and your past, and being able to be proud of your parents' past. But then there's also a line in there as well, which is really beautiful, which is, we are not our parents, right? Which is this concept of not saying I'm detaching myself from my parents or anything like that, but understanding what your role is in carrying on their legacy.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Can you expand on that? Can you talk about that possibly?
If I may share something that comes to mind when you ask that, and I hope it answers your question. So what I finally found out what the turning point for my dad was in that, what made him change his mind, because for a very long period of time, it was no communication between him and I. There was no communication. I'd call and he would say, so did you decide? And when I didn't give, a yes, I'm going to break up, it was a hang up and we wouldn't talk. And so finally he called. So he was the one that called, and he goes, I give you my blessing. If that's where your heart is, go for it. And so I finally asked what was the tipping point or the turning point. And so this was told to me. I've got cousins. I've got two male cousins, first cousins. One lives in London. One lives in Nigeria. They're brothers. And the older one lives in Nigeria. So he goes to London to visit his younger brother. My dad lives in London. And he had made that trip. I find out because of what was going on, he'd found out that my dad wasn't talking to me and all that hullabaloo. And so he'd gone over, he goes to his brother and he goes, so what are we going to do about uncle? They call my dad uncle. What are we going to do? This isn't okay. And they're having this talk and trying to figure out how to get my dad to change his mind. And so they go visit my dad and they're in the kitchen and they're, you know, bouncing off each other. No, you go. Well, I'm not going to go. Well, you're the oldest. You go. And well, you're the youngest. So I'm telling you to go. And so he goes back and forth. They go back and forth. No one wants to do it. So finally my older cousin, you know, mans up and he walks into the living room and he goes, so this is the conversation that ensues. So he tells my dad, so uncle, so about Bolude, what's going on? And so my dad goes on to tell him like that wasn't the plan. There was a whole, you know, arrangement. There was a whole plan and this deviates from that and it's not okay. So my cousin goes, his name is Tumi. He goes, so my cousin Tumi goes to my dad. So uncle, can I ask you something? And my dad says, yes. And he goes, so what if Bolude calls you? And she says, dad, I'm coming to visit you in London. And I'm coming not by myself. I'm coming with my family. And you get to the airport and Bolude is walking towards you and you recognize Bolude. But as you're walking towards her, there's a little kid that runs, breaks free from her arms and runs towards you shouting, grandpa, grandpa, grandpa. And he puts his arms up wanting you to carry him. And you look at the boy and you go, huh, he's not dark like me. He looks nothing. I don't get it. What, his skin color is different. And do you turn around and go, nah, not happening. And you walk away. And before he's done, my dad goes, no. No, that is bone of my bone, flesh of my flesh. I scoop that little boy up and I grab him and I hug him and I hold him and I embrace him because he's my blood. And that was the day my dad calls me. And so legacy and roots and I hope that answers your question.
It does. Sorry. It does. Gosh, we're all crying here.
Sorry.
No. Thank you for being open enough and I hope, you know, being able to have the space to be able to share that story. It means a lot. It means a lot.
Thank you.
You don't know me, and being able to share that story means a lot to me. So thank you.
My pleasure.
But that's the openness of the film, though, right?
Yeah. Yes.
That's the openness, and you both have open hearts, and you're inviting an audience in to engage with that. It's beautiful.
And it's scary. It really is. We've been actors I've been a professional actor since I was about 14 years old, which is going on 30 years. And it's not the same as having to write experience people's reactions to your writing, particularly when you're writing about your own experiences in your own life and your own family. And you want to do right by them as well as you can. And, my father is passed away as he is in the story. And, it is this incredible vulnerability of that I, you know, haven't experienced to this degree, I have to say, despite being a storyteller and in the industry for so many years. It's you know, it is really like a child. We keep coming back to the analogy of this being for baby.
In your pregnancy and what a harsh birth, man.
Absolutely. And I, you know, I was crying as well for this story because I'm a mixed child. So when I hear the story Bolude tells, you know, I feel like the little kid who's not the right skin color, who's running to hug my grandparents.
Yeah.
And what, just wanting to be seen and recognized by them and not Not seen as other by them. And so it was a, you know, I think being in mixed relationships and being a mixed person is really a significantly different set of experiences than people who identify as either one or the other. And so that, you know, that came together in the story as well, being able to talk about those things, being able, the way that I was relating to what was happening to Belluda, my sister, was happening at the same time as me, kind of going on this journey of starting to just reject the things that everyone on the outside was telling me my whole life, like you have to choose, or this is what you are because this is what you look like to me, or this is the category I put you in, you know, for whatever reason they have. So just being able to kind of have that discussion, which I quite honestly haven't seen in media and in discussions until very, very recently. I've seen, you know, some mixed psychologist for the first time, and a very few kind of smaller media shows just talking about the experience of being mixed. And so it was really joyful to just be able to have that discussion and also to bring the Australian perspective to that discussion, because the American voice is so loud in our international discourse. You know, I am forever grateful for the way that Australian First Nations people saw and without exception, recognized and welcomed to me, to the First Nations community. And, you know, part of partially because of the culture, but also partially because of the history of what's happened in Australia, there is a very, very kind of unified, strong reaction to this idea of mixed, to this idea of, you know, what it means to be mixed. And I thought, this is so important to talk about this as well in the international discourse. This idea, this really beautiful idea that, you know, you're not one or the other, and you're not torn, and you don't belong here or there, but you are just completely 100% one of us, and really kind of blood quantum, which is this idea that comes from owning land and owner and trying to allocate resources, you know, according to who's on the top of the list and who isn't. The idea that blood quantum is just something that doesn't apply within country, within culture, was really, really beautiful to talk about on the screen.
And
Yeah.
I think, I mean, again, like you do all this, like you're having all of these discussions in a comedic space, right? You know, and the fact that we can go from having like a nice open discussion to crying to laughing, right? That is that's the joy of the film as well, right? That's the journey of the film. And I know that you've got screenings coming up, so let's talk about those, because that's huge, right? Getting to see yourself in a film is big, but getting to see yourself on a cinema screen is also massive. So what's your hopes and dreams for the upcoming screenings?
I like to hide by the door so I can escape if I need to.
I think I'm really looking forward to watching everybody else watching it. And I'm you know, I my fear initially was I hope they laugh when they're supposed to laugh. I hope they cry when they should cry. I hope, you know, you kind of wanting all the marks to be hit within the audience. And now I'm just at this point where I'm like, it's a gift, and like, and with gifts you give it with all your heart. And you give it, and the recipient receives it however they're going to receive it. And that's what it's going to be, you know. And those will there'll be some who will receive and go, you know what, that hit. And some might go, you know, I don't know, I don't, you know, I don't, I can't relate or whatever, or what, you know. There'll be different types of recipients. And I think that my job is to do the giving and to give it with all my heart. And we've done that, and we're doing that. And I have to be okay with that. I have to be very okay with that. And with everything I come, I'm learning, I'm on this journey of gratitude. I constantly go back to that place of gratitude. I'm thankful to God I got to do this. I'm thankful to God for Michaela. I'm thankful to God for my family. I'm thankful to God my dad got to see this, like gets to see this. I'm thankful. And gratitude is such a beautiful space to be in, because you get to, you're free from any, you know, expectation, and you can just exist and be and live and see what is around you, and you get to see the truth. So that for me is where I'm gonna stay in that space.
It's a good space to stay in. I'm so grateful for the time that you've given me, and the, you know, the openness of the conversation. Again, I'm just a stranger, right? You don't know me. I'm just a person on the internet, and you're both being so open and honest, and hopefully the space that I've given you is also a bit of a gift in a way, because the gift that you've given me is the answers in your time. And that's, I mean, I'm very, very lucky with what I get to do. I get to talk to some wonderful people from all around the world, and they tell me all these fantastic things. And I always say this in a very selfish manner. Like, I do this because it's the stories that I want to hear, just like you've created a film that you want to see for yourselves on screen. Yeah. And so it is in kind of a bring it back to the beginning kind of way. It is about creating the space for what we want in the world. And it means so much to be able to see both of you go, you know what? We're not seeing our stories. Let's make it. And you've made something really cool and great, and just that makes you feel good. And we need that. So congratulations. Thank you again for your time.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Andrew. You really are a gift. Thank you. Thank you so much.
I didn't mean to call myself a gift. I promise. But
no, I'm calling you a gift. It's an accurate.
But you are. I'm looking at your DVD case behind you. You're absolutely full, you know, back wall of DVDs and film. You know, you can see that you really are a film lover and a lover of the stories that we tell on the screen and that. And we are screening in Perth. I just found out at the Backlot. I think on the 30th of March it is. So that's like hot off the press. So we have our world premiere in Los Angeles at the LA Women in Film Festival. Then we have our Australian premiere at the Hayden Orpheum in Gadigal, Sydney, on the 19th of February. And then we're going to have screenings around. So it's all after waiting around, you know, for over a year since we finished now. It's all going to happen very quickly.
Very quickly.
Yes.
Your film.
Thanks for listening to this chat with Michaela Caratini and Beluda Watson. For upcoming screening dates, check the show notes on thecurb.com.au. See you on the next one.